This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's Friday the 10th of April here in the sunny climes of western Japan, but it's still the 9th of April back in the rainy climes of western USA, where I'm joined by the webmaster, researcher, host, and reigning king of MediaMonarchy.com, James Evan Pilato. James, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate coming back with you so soon. And again, it's great. And it's so amazing, again, that we talk about the technological sort of revolutions that you and I right now, I'm Thursday in Portland, Oregon, and you're Friday in Japan. And here we are. And it sounds like we're right next to each other.
Well, it really is great to have you back on the program. And for my listeners who haven't done so yet, I would once again like to recommend that they check out MediaMonarchy.com, both the website and the podcast, as it's an excellent source of information, and I do discover important news stories pretty much every time I go there. So today, though, I'd like to talk about James Evan Pilato's newest website, one with an equally interesting and evocative name, foodworldorder.com. So James, explain that title to us, if you would, and tell us a little bit more about that site.
Well, it's funny, you know, like a lot of things that sort of, they happen as a spur of the moment. A lot of things, if you try and plan out, they'll never come to fruition. But Food World Order, the name and the phrase and the idea for the site were literally coined live while I was doing a recent episode of Media Monarchy on the Portland Radio Authority and Revere Radio Network. As I was covering food and enviro health stories, and was sort of, you know, speaking off the cuff and pontificating, and I was trying to grasp for the words to describe what was going on. And again, whether we were talking about the New World Order or talking about what we've recently seen, the new financial world order, in grasping for what we're seeing and I think what we're going to see more of, Food World Order hit me. And when I got home, just a couple hours later, I checked online to see, and foodworldorder.com was available, and for $9.99 I rolled the dice and bought the .com site and immediately married it to the free blogger account, which is the way that I do MediaMonarchy.com. It sort of keeps it cheap for me. So buy the .com and just have it point to the blogger site, and immediately started posting, and I've got almost probably a dozen postings, and it's only been a few weeks for Food World Order. And again, it was something where we're literally swimming in news. There's a barrage of it, and it's impossible to try and cover it all. Try, you know, as I might, to get everything onto MediaMonarchy.com. There are times, and I believe we've talked about this before, where you could almost have separate sites for each few angles of these things that we're covering. So a site that could just be devoted to 9/11/77 terror research, or a site just devoted to the money crash, or a site just devoted to the environment and the health and the food. So that's what I want to try and do with Food World Order. The other thing I would like to do, and again, it's great to sort of be able to launch a new site. And again, Food World Order is still for what I think in its kind of embryonic state, but it's nice to launch something and already have a little bit of a built-in audience that I have from Media Monarchy. So at least it was nice to get some, you know, pretty quick feedback, which was fantastic. One of the things I would ultimately like to do is open Food World Order up to a little bit more of a collaborative effort, because again, we're always trying to make connections. We do sometimes feel like we're, you know, by ourselves doing websites and radio shows, that we need to connect with people more. So the idea would be to try and open up Food World Order. So I may find some extra editors and some extra help for the site, hopefully in the not too distant future.
Well, that sounds exciting, and it's obviously part of that new media revolution that we were talking about last time you were on the program. But in terms of the Food World Order itself, I think you and I are on the same page in seeing that there is a major trend developing towards the control of the food supply, the use of the food supply, the use of medicines as a way of perhaps controlling populations themselves. And that's an area of research that there aren't a lot of people out there doing at the moment, but I can guarantee you that foodworldorder.com is going to become a very popular site in the future, because it's one of the few sites out there that's specifically tracking this trend. So what can you tell us in broad outline about the general shape of the food world order and who is manipulating or shaping it and to what end?
I believe when I started to think about, you know, for the last few years, as we all basically are trying to prepare both, you know, sort of physically, but also mentally and emotionally for what we really see quite possibly coming down the pike, that we think about the things that we need to store up or have in supply. And when you think about, you know, when I started to think about, well, should I have a bunch of gold? Should I have a bunch of silver? Should I have cash or you know, bury it all in a bucket in the yard or God knows what? But when it came down to it, you think, well, for the most part, what are you going to use that money for? And it's going to be food. So immediately, food becomes way more important than money. And again, money is only something people have agreed and have faith in, something that has value, whereas food is intrinsically a part of us. Again, it's also, I have to admit that this is all kind of funny. I can, you know, after years of study, I would love to talk about, you know, whether it's Lee Harvey Oswald or drills on 9/11 or any of those kind of parapolitics situations. Looking closer into the food world order, for me, is a really new thing. And again, just as I was kind of prepping up for our conversation, looking at a couple of things, I'm going to learn things constantly as I look at who actually owns what. And again, we still find, whether we're tracking banksters and gangsters and politicians, you'll still see it within the food that there's a handful of corporations that mass and merge together. And anytime there is something real and something kind of small and grassroots and maybe regional, they move to scoop it up. So you can see the same thing happen whether it's a small food company or whether it's a small record label or movie company. Anything small, rather than risk competing with something real and from the people and from Main Street for the most part, they would just buy it up and subsume it and consume it. So just looking at things, I know that this is all kind of brand new to me. The other thing is that I will have to admit is I'm no picture of clean living by any stretch. I drink and smoke and eat cookies and eat bad things. I know a lot of times my friends go, well, damn, I think he may actually live on cigarettes and coffee. If he stopped doing that stuff, I don't know how well Jim would do. But again, learning and trying to get away from some of those things, I think I have to thank, you know, not only my family, but definitely my girlfriend, and also my current job. This is something I've never gotten into too much on my own radio show, just I don't want anyone to know where I work, more out of just, it's not exactly necessary, and maybe I don't want my workplace associated with me, not so much that I don't want people to know where I work, is maybe I don't want them to some point be like, you have some crazy 9/11 truther guy working for you. Regardless of any of that, I work for the last 2.5 or so years for a small Oregon-only chain of grocery stores. Not quite organic grocery stores because, and I believe this is kind of the key to the business's success, and they've been around for almost 10 years and there's about a dozen stores, again, only in Oregon, is that we do actually carry some of the local small vendor organic natural items, but we also sell Snickers and Coca-Cola. So I think we get both, you know, both sides of the aisle. So again, that's, I think, been a key to the success. We being the company that I work for, have been recently kind of brought into the Whole Foods antitrust kind of situation. So the big Whole Foods Corporation, if listeners weren't aware of any of this, you know, they're always gobbling up smaller companies, and occasionally the Federal Trade Commission will do its job and look in and see if maybe some of these things are monopolies. In Whole Foods' case that they're building, they basically wanted access to just reams and masses amount of private data from the company that I work for in an effort to prove their own case, saying, see, this company is thriving, thereby proving that Whole Foods is not a monopoly. So they wanted part and parcel of every, you know, emails and all kinds of ridiculous things that I think ultimately the president and the CEOs were able to talk them down and be like, here's 8 pages and that's it, and drop it. And I think ultimately they did. So working for a store that has, again, in the Pacific Northwest, we're kind of known, you know, there's a lot of biking, a lot of local kind of food and kind of a community there that, again, I need to get more involved with. So seeing that and working around that makes me think, well, how do I need to change my habits to try and be a healthier person? It's a difficult thing, again, in that I don't know how I found myself in this situation, man. It sounds, you know, kind of ridiculous to say. Again, it's, I drink and smoke, but I work at a health food store. And so I think the website and doing the things that we do is, a lot of times, yes, I hope to spread information and educate other people, but a lot of it, man, is, it's educational for me.
Well, absolutely, and it's the same with me in the Corbett Report. I don't think we're preaching to people here as much as we're genuinely attempting to uncover information and educating ourselves at the same time as we're educating our audience. And hopefully our experience and our process of learning can be an example for people in the audience that we can learn together. And certainly it's something that I'm dealing with in my own life as well. And even a couple of years ago, I had no idea about the health effects of things like aspartame. And it's a process of educating yourself and eventually, hopefully, getting yourself off of these types of things, which are obviously nauseous chemicals, and educating yourself about the real and true foods and natural medicines that are out there. And yeah, it's definitely a long process of learning and finding out more about these things. But you made a number of important points there, and also some of the main players that you pointed out there, some of the main companies that are buying up the smaller and independent companies, just like in the media business or something like that. But of course, in the media business, if a larger news corporation buys up a small newspaper, for example, it can be a detrimental thing, but not necessarily a life-threatening thing. And yet, in the food business, when we have big agro buying up small food companies, it can literally mean starvation or death for a number of small farmers. And it gets into some very interesting areas. So let's start talking about some of the food control, food supply areas. For example, I think some of the main players in this food world order are some of the same players that we see in other aspects of the new world order, including the financial crash and other aspects. And one of the main players that comes to mind, of course, is Henry Kissinger. And Kissinger, back in the 70s, of course, penned the National Security Memorandum 200, in which he advocated using food as a weapon against third world nations to try to control their populations. And I believe he's been credited with a saying something to the effect of, if you control the food, you control the people. So obviously this is an important aspect. What else can you tell us about ways that food supplies can be used as a weapon against the people of free and independent nations?
Again, as I've just been looking at some of the things, even today, just trying to look at some of the connections, is seeing some of the regular things that, again, it's all very stealthy. Just as, you know, sometimes record labels look like they're independent, but you find out they're actually owned by Warner Brothers or Bertelsmann. Some of the smaller food companies. Now, I don't know if you or some of the listeners, but we at the store carry these products, and these are the sort of organic good products, things like Santa Cruz Organics or Knudsen or Maranatha or Sunspire. Knudsen and Santa Cruz are owned by Smucker's, and I even just discovered, again, just this morning, that Kettle, which Kettle Foods is a big Oregon-based company out of Salem. And I just looked, and they are owned by Lion Capital out of the UK, another international firm. So whether it's, you know, international firms buying up our, you know, freeway systems or our media companies or our food companies, it is really all connected. And I also, you know, again, I don't necessarily really subscribe to the sort of unified field conspiracy theory and that there's, you know, a very tippy top that disseminates all to below. I think a lot of it is competing families, a lot like gangsters. And again, sometimes gangsters, you know, hey, we got to bump each other off, but ultimately they're not going to do anything that throws the game board off the table. They're not going to do anything that's going to jeopardize their overall control. The amazing thing I think that we're seeing now, and I'm actually kind of surprised, we do at the store, we of course can do, you know, special orders where people order cases of things. We also have, you know, bulk food sections where you can go in and just get, you know, get as much rice or peanuts or trail mix or whatever you want. I still haven't really seen the amount of, I guess, you know, for lack of a better term, food hoarding that I would have expected. Again, I'm hopeful in that if things get a whole hell of a lot worse, that maybe I'm at least hopefully in a good geographic area here in the Northwest. And again, there are a lot of, you know, a lot of farming in both Northern California and Washington as well as Oregon. But again, we can't necessarily bank on that or guarantee that, because what if things break down and what if there's no gas to put in those trucks or to pay those guys to bring that food here? We're all kind of dependent on something. I was watching, this is slightly tangential, so bear with me for just a second. I was actually watching, my girlfriend and I, we watched Bonnie and Clyde last night, and I'd never seen the film. So the film is from 1967, and it's set, of course, just sort of post-depression, or actually just about mid-depression. And they're traveling around, and they, you know, are shooting up bottles behind a house, and a farmer shows up, and he says that this was his house, except the bank took it. So Clyde lets him shoot holes in the bank sign that, you know, says it's foreclosed on his farmhouse. The whole movie, the underlying basically enemy in Bonnie and Clyde is the banksters, because there was just an engineered depression. I, again, shudder to think that we could somehow return to that. And I try and be sort of optimistic that, oh, no, it can't really get that bad. But ultimately, the thing that, of course, you know, probably keeps us up at night is the fear that it may actually happen. But it also seems like they're going for the slow roast, the slow boiling of the frog, that we won't necessarily, or at least it doesn't seem that way, that we're going to wake up and we're going to see stormtroopers marching down the street. It's just going to be a slow but sure slide, as every day I hear, oh, you know, so-and-so's husband, well, they got laid off too. I worry that I'm not doing enough to take care of myself and my girlfriend, much less try and warn the neighborhood or any of the people who listen and visit the website or the show. So again, just like you said, I think a lot of it is working through this, you know, new medium, new medias, again, is a way to try and figure out things for yourself.
It certainly is, and you raise some interesting points there. Obviously, I think the food world order is very much related to the economic crash that is happening around us, and you're right. Whether or not there is any economic crash, or whether or not the food supply is really disrupted, I think people at the very least should have some food, storable food backed up just in case of a momentary disruption in the food supply, let alone the possibility of longer term unrest or problems. But let's start to get into some specifics. I know your site is relatively new, but let's talk about some of the stories that you're tracking at the moment, or some of the trends that you see developing already.
Well, again, just as you sort of start a new site and think, okay, I'm going to focus on this thing. It's like, well, Food World Order actually probably encompasses the environment, the health, the water, our animals, our pets, the drugs that they try and force feed us. And, you know, hell, we're figuring out that, you know, well, if you just don't want to take the drugs, we'll get it to you through the water. So we've recently seen, of course, more and more studies. Again, it just kind of reproves it over and over again. We, of course, last year had, I believe, the Associated Press do, you know, their own kind of investigational reports and found in multiple cities, you know, horrible, you know, far above what the EPA save criticism about them for perhaps a different discussion, but even what they say would probably be okay in the water, it's far, far worse than that. So whether we see that it's, you know, rocket fuel in the water, we've now recently seen, and again from the Associated Press, it's rocket fuel chemical found in baby formula. And that is definitely one area where I have seen a lot of changes, is basically the baby section on aisle 9. I've seen a lot of the bottles switch out and a lot of the things stop moving because, fortunately, again, the public outcry. When you see parents starting to go, the shots, I've heard a lot about the shots, and then they gave their kid the shots and lost them. So when we see a lot of parents even faking religious convictions to avoid vaccinating their kids because they're scared of it. Fortunately, there was an outcry, of course, and you covered it, on the bisphenol A, the BPA that was found, the chemical that was found in the bottles. And again, a lot of the times when you try and explain these things to people, a lot of the times they want the big question. It's like, but why would they do this? The average person is probably a good person. And I think that's why a lot of times people can't wrap their brains around the horrible, macabre things that are done. And again, is it a guy in a room going, I'm going to put chemicals in a bottle, ha ha ha, and kill the children? Maybe it is. Maybe there really are probably Mr. Burns type characters tinting their fingers at the evil that they do. But it trickles down and it's compartmentalized, and somebody works in a factory and they just know that we make these bottles these certain way, or we know that we process this food in a certain way, and they're not in on it, but they are involved. So to backtrack, as we were talking about the outcry, fortunately, we've seen a lot more outcry lately. So whether it's about vaccinations or whether it's about the chemicals in the baby food or whether it's about the engineered economic collapse, more and more people, I think, are discovering things. And again, that's kind of the whole question we ask ourselves as we're doing these things. Hey, people are waking up. People are really starting to talk about this stuff, but is it happening fast enough? And we're not really going to know the answer to that question. But to return to some of the things, again, that are on foodworldorder.com, finding, again, as saying this is an embryonic thing, and finding some of the sites, which, of course, I think would have to mention naturalnews.com. And I believe you recently talked to Mike Adams, who, again, is, as if all this isn't scary enough, I believe he's more or less moved to Ecuador and said, you know, not for a visit, not for a vacation, but I'm getting out of the U.S. because I'm afraid for myself and my family. Naturalnews.com is a great resource, and I found other sites, whether it's eatdrinkbetter.com or Sustainablog, and again, finding what's a reputable source and what isn't is kind of new to me within this realm, because it's easy for me, or at least easier for me, to look at, you know, the quote-unquote conspiracy sites, and I know which ones I trust and which ones I don't. I'm now learning and trying to figure out which sites in the Food World Order that I trust. We also have all the recalls. That's something that, again, of course, hits my workplace on seemingly a weekly basis. And then, of course, when something kicks in, it was almost on a daily basis. We had the peanut scandal in the last several months. there weren't too many days that went by where there wasn't some new voluntary recall, even down to what surprised me, some of the smaller vendors who, you know, come up in their own truck, whether it's, I believe, Odwalla out of Washington or some of the other ones, voluntarily recalling some of their energy bars and breakfast bars and things because they may have been in contact. The strange thing with all of this is that it all traced back to what I believe is called the Peanut Corporation of America, a massive, massive corporation. Whether it's the economic crash or something like 9/11, it seems like the problems, again, are caused by the biggies, but we get the blame. So 19 hijackers beat the world's most advanced military defense system, and it's not, you know, their fault, it's our fault, and the apparatus is turned on us, and I have to take off my shoes, and Grandma has to dump out her water. The banksters engineer this collapse through all the funny money schemes, the money masters, the banksters, but it's those stupid poor people, it's their fault. They didn't need to take those loans out. They shouldn't have done it. They caused the problem, and then we have to suffer the consequences. And again, so if there's, you know, benefits from any of these sort of industries, the CEOs get the benefits, but if there are any debts or deficits, we're going to have to tighten our belts as the American public. I worry we're going to see a massive sort of food 9/11, if you will, that again will make problem, reaction, solution. Let them cram through the things like H.R. 875, the Food Naturalization Safety Act, something like that, H.R. 875, that again wants to control what all sounds like a good thing. All these things, they sound kind of good on their face. Yeah, we want to make sure that our food is safe, but what it ultimately is going to do is control it from the farm to the fork. H.R. 875 is only one of these things, and I'm sure that there are others coming down the pike any moment now.
Well, there certainly are. In fact, there's really too many angles and too many pieces of legislation and new Orwellian regulations coming down the pike for us to keep our eye on all of them, it seems. So it will be good to have a site like Food World Order that we can trust. You've made a number of important points there, and I'd just like to consolidate some of what you were saying. First of all, with the boundary between food and medicine becoming blurred is something that I think is going to be a trend that we'll see more of in the future. And certainly that relates to Codex Alimentarius, which we've talked about before, in which food and vitamins even will be regulated as a type of medicine insofar as they affect the human body. Yet we'll see, I think, more bizarre GM hybrids, which will actually put medicines into the food. But those, of course, won't be as severely regulated as naturally occurring compounds. You talked about sites that you can trust in this field, and again, that's extremely important. There's a lot of snake oil salesmen out there, and it's important that we start to get that sense of what we can trust and what's not going to be a reputable source. And you talked about the recalls. Of course, that's one of those things where it is a obvious problem, reaction, solution type scenario. And I think my listeners would understand that immediately. It's that when the problem is created, no matter how it's created or by whom, it will always serve to benefit those people who seek more control over the system itself through the problems and reacting to the problems. So now we get to see the USDA and the FDA take over more and more and more of the regulatory process when they so ultimately failed in protecting the public safety in the run-up to these tainted food scandals. So again, all of these are extremely interesting aspects, and we're coming to the end of our time here, but I just wanted to pick up on another trend that you seem to be tracking on the site so far, which is vaccines and the vaccine tests about the doctors in Poland who were testing H5N1 vaccine on homeless people without their knowledge or consent. What can you tell us about that story?
This is a story that unfortunately, it seems at times, or at least being here in the States, we have to go to the foreign press to read about some of the really important things to the world. So from the French agency press, and again, I have this posted up on foodworldorder.com, health workers on trial for vaccine scam in Poland. You can even Google variations on this, pesticides tested on foster children, that these things happen. A handful of people get burned, and here in this case, there's 9 people. And I don't really believe for a second that just 9 people came up with the idea that, oh, we're going to test this on nearly 200 people. And of course, it's whether, you know, we're sending people to war, it's always the poorest and usually darkest skinned among us who are the first to go, whether it's off to war or test this new cold remedy. And of course, they probably pay them a pittance and it kills them. Whether they do that sometimes also to military guys saying, oh, you know, sign this form and you'll, you know, get a little weekend furlough and we're just, you know, testing some stuff on you. And if they drop dead, they sign the form and it's all taken care of. These things are not in the front of the newspaper. Fortunately, with the new media, there's not really so much thing as a back of the newspaper. It's all fairly level. If we can get the word out that, again, doctors testing dangerous new pandemic vaccines on homeless people to see if it, you know, to see if it's going to work and see if it doesn't work. Googling different variations of these things, again, we know that if they didn't actually give black men syphilis in Tuskegee, they at least let them suffer from it, meanwhile telling them, oh, we're treating you for it. These things have been done a lot over the last 100 years. You know, you have a lot of people who say, oh, well, I don't believe in conspiracies, or, oh, I have, you know, any of this stuff that you're talking about. If you start to question them, like, okay, so what, you know, what don't you believe? I'm pretty sure it's a fact that, you know, whether it's drills on 9/11 or the Jekyll Island meeting in the Federal Reserve and all these things are completely real. Testing pesticides and testing vaccines on unwitting people is a reality. Unfortunately, we're seeing this, you know, abroad, and I believe I even recently just saw in the Oregonian here that, of course, you know, foster children in bad shape, even though, you know, Health and Human Services are supposed to be taking care of it. And whether this is a good one, outside the store all the time, there are on any given day different folks doing petitioning, and petitioning is actually fairly rampant in Portland. It can be kind of annoying to get around sometimes, where there's always somebody with a clipboard on the corner. They're just waiting for you to say, excuse me, do you have a minute for, and a lot of times it's either, you know, they're well-meaning people and they're trying to do their thing. But a lot of times outside the store, I've got Planned Parenthood, and I have been able a couple of times to go talk to them and say, you know, Planned Parenthood, founded by Margaret Sanger, hateful, racist eugenicist, called black people weeds. And I had one guy go, well, it's not like, you know, we're not out, you know, measuring people's skulls anymore. But these are ultimately, I think, eugenics ops all the way around. So whether it's the vaccines or whether it's the food or the control of food or making designer babies. So, you know, the positive and negative eugenics. Vaccine scams in Poland. There's also illegal drug trials from Pfizer. Pfizer recently settled out of court for $75 million. Again, testing drugs in Nigeria. A lot of times you see these international companies of sometimes with a Western base. They, of course, are going to go test their vaccines on poor, dark-skinned folks around the world. So gypsies outside of Italy, I think, recently have been vaccinated with God knows what. We see parents sometimes, you know, being paid to get sterilized. It's really tomorrow's children. If, of course, I believe you've probably played clips of that show. And if the folks out there, if you haven't checked out, you know, clips of movies all about the eugenics op. And again, we're not calling it eugenics now. We're, you know, what's the term for it now?
That's a good question. What is the term for it now?
it's like I'm trying to think of some of the euphemistic terms, whether it's, you know, biodiversity or any of those kind of terms.
Well, it has morphed into a number of things, and of course there's also the bioethics boards, which are really...
Bioethics, yeah. That's perhaps what I was looking for. With the Planned Parenthood people outside, one of my most successful one, I talked to a girl, she had never heard the term eugenics before. And so I basically, I was like, write down something for me. And I'm not going to harass people and go, oh, what the, you know. I had her write down, I was just go Google this. Eugenics plus Endgame. And so hopefully she went and checked out Alex Jones's documentary Endgame about the food world order. The interesting thing, and what this is, I think, for me, the kind of great capper to put on it, as I'm trying to learn more about this, my girlfriend is very helpful in this because she loves food more, you know, more than I do, in a way that I feel like I do need to reach that point, that it is the most, almost one, you know, one of the few basic necessities of life. You know, there's just all we basically, you know, money and jobs and work and all the garbage in the world. Ultimately, we just need some love and some food and some shelter. In talking about all this, we know that, of course, you know, corporations have personhood. At some point, decades ago, somehow in a court of law, we decided that corporations were like people. And like the great documentary, The Corporation, you know, sort of asked the question, well, psychologically, if we put this person on a couch, what kind of person would they be? Which, of course, they're a raving sociopath. Another phrase, like my girlfriend coined the phrase media monarchy that I took and ran with. She said, why don't we practice eugenics on the corporations?
I love that idea. That is great. Well, that is great. You raise a number of important points, but absolutely, it's important, I think, for us to keep in mind that although as informed as we may be or may like to be about the issue of eugenics and the centrality of eugenics to what we're studying and what we're researching here, it's important to keep in mind that, yes, the vast majority of the public has not even heard of the term before and does not know what it means. And I've talked to degreed people who have gotten their degrees in genetics itself, in the study of genetics, who have never heard the word eugenics, which to me is mind-blowing. But it goes to show that if you just eliminate something from the curriculum or just don't look at a certain aspect of a very important period of history, it can really be erased. And by being erased or being unnamed, it can go under the radar. Whereas it's obviously something that's still absolutely central to what we see going on around us, I should say. Well, absolutely. This is a fascinating conversation, James, and we could talk about it at great length. And I certainly hope we will talk about it again in the future. But wrapping up today, why don't you tell people once again how they can find your sites and your podcast?
Well, again, man, thank you very much. I appreciate it. The best way to get in touch and the most active and updated site is, of course, MediaMonarchy.com. Now, I do my radio show live every Friday afternoon on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and they also simulcast it, stream it live on the Revere Radio Network, revereradionetwork.com. And again, as far as the new media goes, a lot of pirate stations around the country have actually picked up my show. So there's a pirate station in Boulder, Colorado, and Olympia, Washington, that have been rerunning the show. So if you go to MediaMonarchy.com, the most recent episodes are always going to be on the top right. And that's where you also find the links to what are essentially just tools to try and get the word out. The links to my Media Monarchy profiles on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and MySpace and all those things that, again, are just tools to get the word out. The best way, again, MediaMonarchy.com. And as well, please, you know, find me on Instant Messenger. Find me on Skype. Send me an email, you know, MediaMonarchy@Yahoo.com. It's amazing. I got a CD in the mail from a guy in the UK who loves the show. He sent me his band's CD. Again, we're trying to make these connections. One thing I will say, and to close it out, as it's Easter. in doing some of my searching around, of course, leaving aside the question of, you know, why people celebrate the resurrection of a religious icon by telling them that a bunny left chocolate eggs in the night. Thank you, Bill Hicks. That actually the horrible marshmallowy treats known as Peeps, which I'm sure you probably know those.
Actually, I don't.
Peeps are only around at Easter time, much like also the Cadbury eggs. They're literally marshmallows covered in, you know, either yellow or pink sugar, and they look like either bunnies or like little birds. Mm. They're one of those candies that people either loathe or they kind of love them because they've remembered them for a long time. They're horrible, sugary treats that you probably shouldn't eat. However, again, just doing some research before this interview, I looked up. Fortunately, the company that owns them is called Just Born, and it is an American-owned family business and always has been. So you probably shouldn't, but you can feel all right if you have some marshmallow Peeps on this Easter.
So go for the Peeps, not the Cadbury eggs.
Exactly.
I'll try to keep that in mind, but I'm not sure how relevant it is in Japan. In fact, I would be amazed to find Cadbury eggs even in Japan. So, at any rate, James, it's a great conversation as always. And once again, I'd like to commend you for your excellent sites, your excellent research, and just tell you to keep doing what you're doing. And I imagine that the foodworldorder.com is going to become as big or even bigger than MediaMonarchy.com in the future, as it's an extremely interesting area. And once again, I hope we can have you back on in the future. So thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, man. Take care.